So I'm going to talk about WCF data services and OData. How many know what OData is? There's always two in the crowd. Okay. Well, this is a good thing to learn about. So before I get into that, I'm going to do some basics on data access stuff. My name is Bill Wolf, Agility Systems. I sell myself as an information architect. I'm an independent consultant, and I have lots of Microsoft certifications, and I've been working with their products for 30 years. Most recently, I'm doing some consulting at Comcast, doing work with ASP.NET, SharePoint Exchange, and some other things like that. And also, I run the Philly.NET user group, so many of you have seen me there, and I've been doing that for about 10 years. So, first thing. We're going to talk a lot about data access today. And one of the things I wanted to make sure you were aware of is the tools that you should be using. And there are two basic ways to get at SQL data if you are a .NET developer. One is the traditional way, which is using the tools that come with SQL Server, SQL Management Studio. I'm assuming, how many of you work with SQL Server in some way, shape, or form? And the rest of you just are too busy eating. Gotcha. Okay. Everybody works with SQL Server, it seems, in some fashion. How many of you work with the Visual Studio 2010 data tools for SQL Server? There's one in every crowd. Yeah, there we go. That's it. All right. So, in the spirit of full disclosure, we have demo number one. This is what we're going to cover. And there's actually seven demos, so if somebody want to keep track of them, that would be fun. So let me go in here, and let's make a new project. And we'll get rid of all this nonsense I have on here. Now, in 2010, and this is the release candidate, by the way, notice that there is a folder called Database. Under there, there's a folder called SQL Server. In SQL Server, we have a database project. Notice that there's database projects for 2005 and 2008 and soon 2008 R2, but they don't have that one ready yet. Now, just as a matter of comparison, if we bring up the traditional SQL 2008 Management Studio and we connect to the database running on our own machine, we can do something really simplistic like expand the databases. And we can go see if there are indeed any databases here. And you see I have a couple of them. There's our old friend Northwind. If I expand that, go down to the tables, go down to customers, right-click, and say, show me all that data. It brings back all the data. So that's pretty straightforward stuff. Most of us are comfortable with this. If we want to edit a table, we right-click and say design. It brings up the table editor. There it is. Okay, and the other thing that's very common is the programmability section. Down here and underneath there, we go to store procedures. If we right-click, we can modify a store procedure. So that's sort of the bread and butter of what you would do with SQL Management Studio. None of you should be doing this. Good. It seems like you understand where we're going with this. The reason you shouldn't be doing this is that the boys in Redmond made something more fun. And back in the day, they actually called this Data Dude. That was its cute little name about 3 years ago. And then they called it GDR, which was really a geeky name. No one knows what GDR stands for. The problem is that the tool set was originally part of Team System. And you couldn't even use it unless you own Team System. They actually relaxed that about a year ago, and they made it so that anybody that had Visual Studio could download these tools and add them to Visual Studio 2008. But they didn't market it very much, so most of you probably don't know you could do this. In Visual Studio 2010, they basically threw up their hands and said, we're just going to put this thing in there. Everybody can use it. In fact, everybody should use it. Whoops. All right, so what are we going to do here? is I'm not going to read through all of these, but we're going to make a database project, and that stuff looks wonderful to me. We have to pick a database, so we're going to pick one that we've already worked with. Let's do AdventureWorks Lite. That one's pretty fast. And it asked me how you want to write the scripts, what options you want to put it, what extensions you want to put on the files. And this actually goes out and connects to your SQL database. It reads all the schema information, and it does something very clever. It puts all the information in a format that developers would appreciate. What I mean by that is every table becomes a source code file. Every stored procedure becomes a source code file. The whole thing is designed so you can take all those files and put it under source control using Team System or even SourceSafe or CSV or any of those other products. Okay, so what do I get here? If I go down and I go into schema objects, go under schemas, and if you understand what those are in SQL Server, down here you'll see that there is a set of tables. And down here there is the customer table. If I click on that, this is basically the same stuff you would edit in SQL Management Studio. The difference is, you're using the same editor that you're used to for all your code stuff, number one. And number two, if I go and, let's see, go down to views here, these are what views look like. Now, all this stuff has IntelliSense, as you would hope. Of course, I'm not hitting the right thing, so it's not showing. But just like with SQL Management Studio, if you go up to Data, there is a Transact SQL Editor, so you can make a new connection. When you do that, you pick your database up here. I'll go to AdventureWorks LT, and I'll say select star from, and there you go. And these are the names of the servers. If you go down a little further, you would want the name of a schema. So we could do DBO. I don't even think DBO has, there's sales LT, there's product. Okay? And when you do that, whatever you do, do not press function 5. Because in SQL Management Studio, that does the run the query. What does it do in Visual Studio? It builds the entire database. So you have to remember not to do that. And up here, they have the friendly little green thing. And you'll see, and I'm going to make sure you really, really, really see this. Okay. Oh, I'm not sure if that, my expanding thing, I'm going to get rid of that. I don't know how that works in Live Media. But you can see up there with the tooltip, it's Control-Shift-E. Is the trick you do to execute this, or you can just press the little green button. And what that does, it goes out and runs the query. And same basic idea, for those of you that have some DBA skills, suppose you want to see the execution plan, and when you run that, you can actually get those nice little execution plans and mouse over them just like you can in SQL Management Studio. Now, the thing that's really useful about a database project is if I go in and do something like change the name of a column, it does refactoring. And what I mean by that is if you change the name of a column or a table, it'll actually go through your entire database and find all 50 places where that table is mentioned. It goes and changes the name in all 50. And then it comes up and it'll make a script for you to apply to your database to update just those objects that are affected by those 50 changes. It's a very useful tool. Who needs a I'm sorry. Anyways, they are making it so there's so many different options here, but I highly recommend you take a look at this. Not only does it do the refactoring, it also does schema comparisons. Did you ever have a situation where there was a production database and a test database, and there were minor differences that they've been harping about for 3 months in meetings. And what this will do is actually compare the two and create a script so you can make them in sync. It does that with schema. It also does that with your data. So you can actually take two databases and make sure they have the same data in them. Extremely useful tool. Now it's built into Visual Studio. Okay. Let's go back to our slideshow. And next thing, data access. So the whole idea of this talk is to explain to you why OData is the future. You didn't know that, did you? Oh, well, you'll know in an hour. Okay, now, all this slide says is every project you get involved with involves a database, and there's no escaping it. This says Microsoft wants to help you, so they've created tools to allow you to work with databases. Now let's do some simple math. I started working with SQL Server in about 1985, but it didn't really count then because everything was like sort of manual. It wasn't until 1989 they came out with something called DB Library where you could actually write to something and get your data back. So if we go from 1989 to today, that's 21 years. And if you count this, there's about 20 different things. So what that means is Microsoft invents a new technology every year. Why do they do this? If they keep changing all the rules, then we have to buy new products and, you know, it's a revenue generator. But that's not really it, because these things don't generate revenue. They're tools for developers. They're part of the framework. Most of this stuff was given away for free. So let's think about what they were doing. They started with SQL Server. They actually bought the SQL Server technology from another company called Sybase. And that got very popular for them in the late 80s, and then they helped to create this thing called DB Library that allowed you to connect directly to SQL Server, but it was specific to SQL Server. Then, since back then there was no C#, they had this thing called C. They actually created something called Embedded SQL for C, where you could take SQL statements and put them into your C language. Now, they were sort of hard-coded, but it made it a lot less code than going down to the, you know, reading arrays and getting the data out one byte at a time. So that was pretty good. Remember that they did that, because that was 1990. Then a bunch of other database companies, Oracle, etc., Ingres, they said, you know, well, there should be a way to talk to all databases, not just SQL Server. So they all got together and they created this thing called ODBC. Many people don't realize Microsoft was the first one to come out with ODBC drivers. And that is a lot of what kicked off corporate custom development back in the VB days, this was prior to VB, this was VB DOS. Then Microsoft started building layers on top of that. They built something called data access objects that made it a little easier, higher level, less programming. This was designed to work on a single machine, client server. They didn't think about what today is common, multi-tier applications. So to do multi-tier, they came out with something called remote data objects, which was pretty popular. And then there was a refinement to ODBC called DelayDB, and that happened around 1996. And that made it so that you could not only do tabular data in SQL Server, this could actually do non-tabular data like XML and things like that. And everybody looked at this and said, oh, this is pretty good. We're going to stick with this for a couple of years. So in 96, they sort of stopped building stuff. Well, something else happened that was very interesting at that time. There was a company in California called Sun Microsystems, and they invented something called Java, and it became very popular in development. So this was a big change for Microsoft. So Microsoft put some people together, and out of a 3 or 4 year research, they came up with something called .NET, which is what we all come here to study. So they stopped building data stuff for a while because they had to build .NET. Well, .NET came out. They looked at this and said, well, people like ADO, let's make a version of it for .NET. That's what ADO.NET was. That was made 8 years ago. The problem is a lot of people are still using raw ADO.NET. And it's not efficient in terms of your time. It's not efficient in terms of processor speed. utilization. But people don't know that they shouldn't use it. So, over the next 5 years, Microsoft sort of left the thing sit. You had table adapters, you had data sets and things like that. It took a couple years, and a lot of people started complaining. And they came up with their own ways to solve the data conundrum. And these are referred to as plain old CLR objects, POCO, frameworks. So somebody give me a name of a POCO framework. And Hibernate's an excellent example. Any others? Rocky Laca wrote CSLA. There's one called Subsonic. There's a whole bunch of these things that came out. Why did they come out? Because Microsoft didn't bother to write a layer on top of ADO.NET. Until people wrote these other frameworks, Microsoft got a lot of feedback that said, why aren't you doing this? They go back into the lab. It takes them years. In fact, they have to redesign the .NET framework and the compilers to handle the data stuff, and they invent something called Link. Link is extremely important, and Andy talked about this, but Link changes the entire game. It allows you to take SQL-like statements and put them in the language, just like we did 17 years ago in FoxPro, and Revelation is the one I used. We were all doing this stuff, and for some reason they got away from it. So Link changes everything. One of the things you should take away from today, everyone here needs to understand Link. You're going to be using it sometime in the future. You need to understand it. It's the basis for all the other things. Now, once they figured out how to do that, then there's a bunch of teams at Microsoft that started writing tools on top of Link. That is why we're having this seminar today, because of all the explosion of new technologies. One of them, Rob talked about, is called Link to SQL. It was the first attempt to put a layer on top of Link and make it easier to code a business application. What's the problem with Link to SQL? It's somewhat specific to SQL Server. It's also not very flexible because it is sort of table view driven instead of programmers like to think more object or logical. They, a year later, came out with a way to fix that identity framework. And you're going to, after my talk, the whole afternoon, you're going to have a very a deep dive with a very experienced speaker on entity framework. So you'll know all about why that's important and how to play with it. Very useful to learn entity framework. Just like Link, this is a game changer because it does to sort of modeling and logical programming what Link did to the syntax. It gets rid of all the data sets and all that. Now we're actually drawing pictures, and that turns into queries. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these things that come after Entity Framework. But you need to understand all of this, because now that you understand that these other things exist, they're all required to get to the rest of the levels. So they all build on top of each other. So once you understand Entity Framework, then you can do data services. If you're a Silverlight developer, the cousin to WCF Data Services is called RIA Services, which stands for Rich Internet Applications. There's another thing that came out last year that takes a database and a model like Entity Framework. You put it in a website, it automatically generates all the forms and all the menus and everything to build an entire application. You're going to see more tools like that soon from Microsoft, where it understands your model. So not only do you want to learn Link, you want to learn models. Okay? That's called dynamic data. And then there's another thing that just came out this year called OData. What's the O stand for? Open is probably the best term. It could mean open access. It could mean open source. Some people refer to it as object, but it's more open. And I'll talk a lot about that at the end. And there's some real interesting things that were just announced at MIX this month about OData. And the last one there, you're not ready for that yet. Okay, so from a pictorial view, back in the old days, we had APIs that went directly to a database. I grew up in that area. I loved it. Did a lot more work. I got a lot of consulting hours. Now it's so easy to do stuff, it's hard to find work, you know. But there's plenty of work out there. Anyways, so Microsoft helped to develop ODBC, then they wrote OLEDB on top of that, and then eventually they put a layer on top of that to get at the data programmatically. Today, that has been replaced with the .NET world, which is ADO.NET, and then Entity Framework, which is model-driven. All of that is based on the Link language. And if you didn't know about this, Link uses two interfaces, iQueryable and iEnumerable. Anything that can match those interfaces is fair game to query with Link. Data services takes all that same stuff and makes it available over the internet in a protocol that is non-specific to Microsoft products. So it can be used by Windows, it can be used by Linux, by iPhones, by Androids, anything. The entire world of the internet is moving towards what is called RESTful data. Microsoft's packaging for RESTful data is called OData. And what did I say about this? You're not ready for this. So. Okay, so did everybody learn how to do this sometime in their life? You didn't learn how to do it correctly, but you tried. Just don't do this anymore. This is old school. What you want to do is this. You want to do the language integrated query stuff. So I'm not going to go into great detail about this because you have already learned this today. Now, did Andy show you link pad? Okay, so my takeaways here, and to save some time, I might skip this. Now I'll show you LinkPad real quick. You can't see enough about this stuff. See if we can find a darn thing. Yeah, that's a good point. I keep forgetting, I'm old. All right, how much does LinkPad cost? How about if you get the good version? It's like $25. That gives you IntelliSense. The only thing I want you to know about LinkPad is that you are supposed to go home today and download it. Do you have LinkPad yet? And how long is it going to be before you have it? All right. As long as it's by noon tomorrow, I'm okay. Okay. You will download this. It is free. It was written by a guy to work on his book. And in the book, he has all these samples here. He has C#3.0 in a nutshell. And you can go here, and you can see queries. And that's what's really cool about this. So if we want a basic query, we can just go and run this query, and it runs the query and shows us the results. And there they are. That's how to find Harry. Okay, somewhere down here, it has the ability to do some queries that actually, now see up on the upper right-hand corner, nutshell MDF? This is actually connecting to a database. And it goes to the database, it goes to customers, and returns back the names and prices from the purchases for those customers. Now, what's really important about this tool is that it lets you see the SQL statements that are generated by Link. So, unlike embedded SQL for C, where you wrote out the statements, what you do in Link is you describe your intentions in a SQL-like syntax. Link then converts that into transact SQL and sends it to the SQL server. Now, one of the things you're going to get a lot of pushback in your organization, once you use Link, the DBAs are going to yell at you. So are the architects, because they just invested 5 to 10 years of their lives explaining to you how you don't know how to access a database server directly, therefore thou shalt write stored procedures and thou shalt have to go through the DBA to actually use those stored procedures. Well, once you have Link, you don't need the stored procedures because it makes code. And I've argued with lots of people, well, I could make a stored procedure better than that. It's like, well, you could, maybe. But SQL Server is pretty smart. And you'd be surprised. If you have the right indexing, that's probably going to be just as good as your stored procedure. So why are you spending all that time writing stored procedures, testing them, change management, documenting them? Why don't you just make a bunch of link models and have them create all the code for you? Link is extremely good when you need to do CRUD, basic in updates, inserts, deletes. You don't need to write procedures for that anymore. Use this. The only place where I recommend using stored procedures still is extremely complex queries, like when you're doing a search page that has like 20 parameters. Something like that can get Link a little confused. So those are worth optimizing. And so when are you going to get Link? You're thinking getting up at 9 or? Okay. And you got that written down, right? All right, good. Okay. So you got to learn how to do the Link sequence syntax. Very simple. You can use it in Link to SQL. So Link to SQL is a way of taking and creating a model. And Rob already went through this, but I'll just do an extremely quick demo. So we're going to go and find a recent project, and hopefully I can find it here, Link to SQL, and we don't need to save the database thing we did. So the models in the main takeaway from this is the model in Link to SQL is called the DBML file. It has a nice little graphical thing, but when you go to the properties, you're going to see that in Link to SQL, the entity, the logical thing in the program, is mapped directly to a table or view. That's one of the things you need to know. Second thing you need to know is that when you make these models, their purpose in life is to generate source code for you. Underneath the DBML, there's a CS file. The source code that's created in this particular model is 1,110 lines of source code. You can see that on the bottom of the screen. And it creates things like order. It creates a class called order that is based on a table in the database. In fact, you can see the association right here. And if you were going to go to the right and see where it says storage, it actually tells you where it stores that particular table. Okay? So that is Link to SQL. Very simple stuff. Now, one of the reasons I show this demo is partly to answer the question, why does Microsoft invent all these things? And they invent them so that you can do what I refer to as composite application development. Composite application development means you make solutions with very little code. You take pre-built components, snap them together, configure, and run. That's a big direction, especially for corporate solution development. Okay? That's why products like SharePoint are so popular, because you can build, you know, departmental applications without much programming. How does Link to SQL enable that? Well, here is a grid thingy. Is that the formal name? It's a grid view one. That's a grid view control. Notice it has underneath it a thing called Link Data Source. So once Microsoft created Link, they could get to the data. Then they created the Link Data Source that takes that data and presents it to an application like ASP.NET. Then if the application has a control like a grid view that knows how to do paging and updates and deletes, all they have to do is connect the grid to the control to the model, and the data just comes up with no code. And that's exactly what this does. See, this is Link Data Source. It's pointing to product data source, which is, if I were to configure this, I could go and configure this data source, and it's basically pointing at the Northwind model, the product table. Then over here, I take the grid, and I take the grid and say, which link data source do you want to use? Just to prove this to you, if you go behind the scenes, that's how much code it takes to do this. None. Now, why does Bill have commented out code there? Well, sometimes when I demo this, I show people that before they created a linked data source, you had to do some of this stuff manually. So you had to go out and get some data and then assign it as the data source. So that one control now replaces all that code. The model in linked to SQL replaces all the code you used to write by hand or you used to create using nHibernate or CSLA. When I run this, without me writing a single line of code, it goes to the model. The model figures out how to query the product table, returns all the data. It tells the grid how many columns there are. The grid automatically knows how to make the columns. It knows how to do sorting. It knows how to do paging. It knows how to do in-place editing. And all of that without any code. Okay, so this is just one example. When I was doing my little history lesson, I mentioned something called dynamic data. In dynamic data, it takes this to an extreme. It does this for an entire database, and it creates all the updates, all the searching, and all the menus without coding. All right, so we've learned how to code less. How are you going to make any money? Oh, it's really good. Does anybody work in a place where all the coding is done? Like finished? No. We all have more work than we can do. The boss doesn't care how much code you write. He cares how many solutions you get completed. So if you want to be a rock star, you learn how to create more solutions with less code, because code takes time. I'm not anti-coding. It's just you have to know when to code and when not to code. And if you understand these tools, you learn not to code as far as it comes to data. One comes Entity Framework. Entity Framework is an object relational mapper. It works pretty well. If you go back in the web and you read about it, you have to be careful. I had a client that came into a meeting. They had a printout written by a guy at Microsoft that explained how Entity Framework was so slow we should never use it. And I asked the guy in the meeting, what's the date on that? He had printed out a blog post from when Entity Framework 1.0 was in alpha. And that was his argument why we shouldn't use it 2 years later. It took them a while to get this to work. Entity Framework, when it first came out, it was a little sluggish. By the time you get to Visual Studio 2010, it's really slick. And Dane will go into great detail about this. He'll show you how you make the models and all the little different tricks you can do with it. You are going to have to know somewhere in your future how to work with Entity Framework, because Microsoft is building a lot of things on top of this. So you want to learn Link, you want to learn Entity Framework. You want to learn how to query it. I'll do you a real simple demo on Entity Framework. Now this one actually does a console application, and I'm only going to show you this for like 2 minutes here. And this is just a bunch of examples I got off of Microsoft's site, and pretty standard stuff. So what you're doing here is you're saying from product in products, select product. Duh, what's that mean? What does that turn into in SQL Server? Select star from product. Why don't they say select star and from product? It's very simple. The select has to be after the from so that we get IntelliSense. That's the only reason they did that. And you wouldn't believe all the arguments they had when they first decided to do this. So when I'm right here, I should be able to look down, and if I hit P there, see product actually shows up as a thingy. Okay? So, but the whole purpose of that syntax is to support this. Now, just for testing, if I were to run this, this brings up a console application. It just returns back all the product names. Very simple. Why didn't it return all the columns? Because the console write line just asks for the name, not the other columns. That's all it does. Okay? Now, there's a sample here, number 16. Okay? And the reason I wanted to show you this one, there is in link and in any framework, there's something called toTraceString. If I take this and run this, it's going to do a very simple query, but it outputs the trace string. And without reading this too carefully, that is your transact SQL statement. So just like I showed you with LinkPad, where you can go in and actually see the transact SQL, in code, if you put the right things there, you can actually see what's going to the database server if you're not a real man or a woman and know how to use SQL Profiler. So you run your code with SQL Profiler on, you can see all the stuff it does. But this is another way to do it where you can actually document the SQL it writes. So that's sort of interesting. Now, in this particular model, entity framework models are a little fancier. They look more refined. The biggest difference is they have rounded corners. And you could do this. Ooh. Ooh. However, when I select an entity, if you go over to the right, there is no association with a table. That's done completely different in entity framework. They have a concept in entity framework called mappings. So what we want to do is look at the mappings. And in the mappings, darn it, there it goes. In the mappings, there is actually a list of all of your names. Which one? Which side is the .NET side? The one that says string and int32. Which one's the SQL side? Nvarchar. Okay? So what you're doing is you're mapping, and by default, it'll make the names in your code the same as the names in the database. But you do not have to do that. You can make any name you want. Suppose you only want to return back three of these columns, then get rid of the rest. And then it does a much more efficient SQL query in the background. It only returns back three columns of information. The reason people got misled by entity framework is they would drag these things up here that had 50 or 100 columns, and they would assume, I'll just put that there, and then I'll say select product. Well, that goes out and gets all 50 columns each time. Of course it's going to go slow. So what you want to do is you want to learn to make models that are more specific to your solution. So what that means is I only want three columns to return, because that's all I'm going to use. And then all the code that's written in the background goes much faster. Yes, you could have multiple models per application. So, okay, now, notice that there's a thing here called update from database. What happens if that annoying DBA goes in as a table or as a column? In the old day, DB library would break. Here, all I need to do is say update from database, go pull in those changes, and it adds all the generated code to support those new table, those new DBA changes. Yes, and that's where Link to SQL didn't know how to do that, because it's mapped tightly to the database schema. Here it says, oh, well, you know, you added one column, it wasn't on the original entity list, so I don't care, I'll just leave it on the side. And it knows how to do the mapping and stuff. So it's much more efficient. The other thing, again, it's a code generator. Now, this is a very simplistic measure of capability. But notice that it generates 2.5 times as much code than Link to SQL did. There's a lot more going on. Entity Framework knows how to do change tracking. It knows how to do all sorts of interesting things. Notification if some, you know, one column changes, you can, and it does associations, it does lots of stuff. All right. So, wasn't that fun? Now that you know all this stuff, what are we going to do with it? We're going to work with ADO, WCF Data Services. So, for a year or so, they were calling this thing ADO.net Data Services. They've had a secret name before this. Anybody know? Astoria, correct. So, but they renamed it during the PDC. They renamed it to be more consistent because it technically it creates a WCF service, which is good. And it is REST-based, which is very good because all the other guys, all the cool kids are working with REST. How many want to be a cool kid? You're never too old to be the cool kid. I want to be a cool kid. I just don't want to dress like my son because then I would trip because my pants would be down here. Look. Anyways, what's good about REST, it was not invented by Microsoft dudes. It was like invented by the open source strange people. And they said, why don't we just use standard HTTP to send data back and forth? Why do we need SOAP? Why do we need fancy stuff? Let's just use the URL syntax in the top of your browser to specify where the data is. And we can just do a get, a post, and that's all we need. And if we do that, guess what? It can go through a firewall without any custom configuration. Now, that doesn't mean you just give all your data away. You can still secure things. Just like any website can be secured with passwords, with certificates. So you can make your data that is REST-based still secure, but it's much easier to work with. It allows you to take this, make it work better in search engines, because search engines like to think in terms of URLs. How many of you have started looking at MVC? Well, MVC, a big part of that is being able to create your own routings based on the syntax of the URI. Well, this does for data what MVC is doing for websites in terms of the URI and the searchability. It delivers the payload as JSON or XML. And I was wondering where Microsoft was going with this a couple years ago. About 2 years ago, they announced that they decided on Atom. And Atom is A-T-O-M. And Atom is sort of a variant of RSS, Real Simple Syndication. It's just a standard way to store XML data. Now, how many of you consider yourself XML whizzes? Oh, boy. How about you actually know what XML stands for? Good. Okay. Didn't they tell us 5 years ago that there would be standard XML formats for every industry, every kind of data? And we believed them. Was that dumb or what? Okay. The only people that really believed that were the guys that still think that EDI is fun. And I know some of you are here that did a lot of EDI. Okay, so they said everybody's going to have these custom XML formats for their data. Well, somebody had the bright idea. It's like, why are we making separate formats for health insurance, for, you know, order transfer? Why don't we put all the data in the world in one format? Then we only need one set of tools to read it. So they looked at all the formats, and they came up with this thing called Atom, which at that time was being used to essentially transfer blog information from one blog to another. And Atom is flexible enough that you can shape it to put almost any kind of data in it. So y'all see a demo of this in a few minutes. But Atom is used a lot, and that is the XML variant that they have. And then there's something called JSON. JSON is for young guy programmers that couldn't understand XML. And what it does is it takes the data and makes it like sort of text-based, and it takes less bytes to transmit than XML does. So therefore, it's faster. It's harder to program against, but it's easier to transmit. Okay? Yes. Now, well, but that's going away because the ability to unpack JSON and Atom is now built into popular browsers. So the latest Internet Explorer, the latest Chrome, Firefox, they all know how to deal with this data natively, which is much, much faster than having JavaScript do it itself. Okay? So, you can use either format. They both have their place. And I'll show you examples of these in a few minutes. Now, let's take an example, or at least show you a little bit about what data services looks like. Darn it. I think this is the one. Okay. I don't like those squigglies the way they are. Hopefully they'll go away. There they go. All right, now, another very important rule I should remind you is that Bill is lazy. Yes, my wife. I never write custom code when I do presentations. Everything I show is from Microsoft samples, everything. So sometimes what I'll do is I'll take in the slides, I'll put a link to where I found the samples. But you don't have to write this stuff. It's all out there to look at. Now, the reason I bring this up, Visual Studio 2010 release candidate has associated with it something called the VS 2010 training kit. How many have downloaded that? What are you going to do Monday? Okay. So if you download that, it has 60 labs for you to go through to learn all this new technology. And videos and all this other nonsense. So you want the VS 2010 training kit. Get the one for the RC version. It's been updated. This is an example. You know, these clever people from Microsoft even put comments in the code. God bless them. All right, so what this is a data model. Customer, yada, yada, yada. Okay? The difference is they did a add new item. When they added a new item, they did a WCF data service. And what do you think that generates? Code. We don't write code anymore. We just click and things happen. How much code do you think it makes? Nope. That's it. Actually, it does make a lot of code. This is the real code. It's still only a couple lines. But it's a bunch of DLLs that know how to take all of your data in your entity framework model and turn it into JSON and Atom. And then when somebody asks for it, it spits it out through a WCF service. The service has the extension SVC. So it made us a service, and it gives you two lines of code. Now, careful, you actually have to type something here. You have to tell it whether you want all the tables or just specific tables available. And my question would be, well, why wouldn't you use them all? Well, you might make an entity framework model that does other things. So suppose it has six tables in it, but I only want my product list to be available to customers. Then in here, I would say, just allow products, entity rights dot read, and that makes products available read only. So there's some security stuff going on here. No. Star means all tables. Two tables or commas? I think you do commas. I have to go back and look at the actual syntax, but it's a good question. But there's a way to do that. All right, now, let's stop just screwing around with this. I'm going to right-click and say View in Browser. Ooh, it made XML. Now all the JSON guys are going to get upset. All right. So notice that it has a bunch of table names. But what happens if I go up and type in one of those table names? Oh, it seems to have brought back all the data in the database. Please don't do this with a million records. Now, in Atom, Atom was designed to show you links between different blogs. Okay? Well, in here, they have these things called link rels. A link rel says, well, there's something related to this customer. And if you look here, it says if you put customer 1, something's going to happen. So you go back to customer on your command line, and you do a 1. And guess what? You get a single record. Suppose you do slash title. You get the title. Suppose you do slash dollar value, you get just the data. That's what REST is. WCF Data Services is this free widget that you put on top of Entity Framework with no coding. It creates all this thing for you for free. You really want one of these. Okay, now, if you take this, the real purpose isn't to show XML in your browser. That's silly. The real purpose is to create a front end. So what you might do is you might create a product screen in Silverlight that looks like that. And then in the code for it, you would do a little bit of code to go get the products from the service. And if you were to go up here, you would see there's a service reference to AdventureWorks, and that connects to the SVC file. What does this actually look like in practice? With very minimal coding, it does a query to the entity model and says, find the list of all of the product categories. If I choose one, it goes back and gets the products. If I click on one of these, if I double click it, I can edit it. Okay? I can make new products, etc. So, that's the end result. Instead of having my Silverlight application hardwired to the database, it now talks to a WCF service, which can have all this fancy security and stuff. works through a firewall. Behind the scenes, the WCF service talks to Entity Framework, which then uses its generated code to create T-SQL, and then the T-SQL goes to SQL database and gets the data. Yes? No. This is the next section. That's a good section. Good question. Okay. Now, let's learn more about queries. And again, I only got about 10 or 15 minutes left. I want you to understand a little bit about the syntax. We can't go through all the options today, but here's some ideas. I have examples of all these. So we're going to be able to see the list of entities, in other words, the list of tables, the metadata, all the customers, a specific customer. And I just did this one, the country or the title and the value. We're also going to be able to see related items. So remember in Entity Framework, and I don't know if I made that clear to you, in Entity Framework, in the model, you have these things called associations. So a customer has, on the bottom, addresses and sales orders. Orders, or let's see, there should be a customer order thing too. So all of these things here are called associations. And that's used programmatically to get the master detail, one to many. In WCF Data Services, there's a syntax to read into that. So you can say, find me a specific customer, but give me all of their orders and add up the dollar amounts, all within a URI. And then all the data that comes in, you can map that to fields in your application. Okay? You can do filtering. It looks like that. And I'll show you a cool filter in a minute. Okay? You can do counts and projections. Now, you see on the top it says 1.5. When they first released WCF Data Services, it couldn't do filters or projections. So that's in the latest revision. All this stuff is pretty new. A projection is the same as saying select column names. So you're not, instead of giving me lots of XML, it gives me a little. And it now knows how to do paging. And paging is extremely important if you're hitting against tables that have thousands or millions of rows. Always want to ask for a page at a time. Finally, there is a way in WCF to do service operations. And all this means to you, it's similar to doing a store procedure. So suppose you want the last order date of all the orders in your entire database. Well, normally you have to sit down with the DBA and tell them what you want, and they write a store procedure, and it takes them 2 days to return a store procedure that has this much code and returns one value. But it has the right security and stuff. It's optimized. Okay. Now, or, oh, not here. Or you could just write one line of link that does the same thing, and the line of link will return that. You know, it'll go out, figure out how to query the database, come back with the answer for you. So what you can then do is instead of saying customer, which is the name of a table, then the slash can be the name of a, it's like a method call that you do right on the command line. Now, what's interesting about service operations, if I go and pass a parameter to one, it can essentially do a filter using some .NET logic, then you can take the result of that and then apply other things to it, like say, give me the top three records. And it's smart enough to go to SQL Server and only ask for the top three. So, we don't have enough time to go into detail on service applications. Let's just go do a demo. Now this one is a project called Northwind Web. And again, very simple. It's got that two lines of code that I showed you earlier. Now notice this time I allowed just a single service to run, last order date. This is actually the code for last order date. So it goes to the orders, and it orders them by order date, and it returns take one, select O, where O is order date value. So that's a little lambda thingy there. Okay? Now, what I did here, it's the same thing. It's a service, but I politely took a bunch of queries and put them in a bunch of links. So what happens when I run this, I can see the links, click on it, and there is the last order value. Now, suppose I told you that there are some people, especially at Microsoft, that want everybody to be using this technology. So they would then probably take things like the Northwind database and host them for you so you don't have to do them. And that's exactly what they did. So look at the URL when I click on this. It says services.odata.org Northwind SVC. I mean, why do thousands of us want to be making Northwind SVC? If somebody does it right, why don't we just put it someplace and everybody get to it? eBay does that. Amazon does that. In fact, within the next couple months, if you can't already, you will be able to get to all the eBay data and all the Amazon data this way. There are other services already available. Now, let's do some of the examples. We already saw how to do a customer. Let's get all the orders for a customer. And it does that, and you can see how fast it is. It brings back multiple orders for one customer. Let's go down here and order them by city. And I swear to God it did it. It would take a while to prove that. Let's go find anybody that has a postal code of 12209. There's only one person. But you can see how quick this is. You can do complex things like the year and the order date was equal to 1977. That's actually an expression inside. And, of course, our favorite, how many, it actually does account. So you get the basic idea? And the last one I'll show you is one of these. This is an example of a projection. In here, I'm only returning back the customer ID. So I'm only asking for like one column of data instead of the entire row for each person. Absolutely. Can I do that now? No, because I'm running out of time. But in principle, you could. Okay. So does everyone get the idea of why you want to learn data services? Okay, so did you know that we got to give it a funny name so everybody talks about it? So they gave it this OData name, and usually O is lowercase. I should really fix my slide there. OData is available already in lots of places. SharePoint 2010 comes out next month, or probably in May. SharePoint is the first major Microsoft application that has OData built into it. So you'll be able to get at any of your list or library information with this syntax. Excel Services also does that. The next version is SQL Reporting Services. You'll be able to write a report without coding and have the option to have it appear as OData. And that means you can have a report that people in your company could get with their phones. That's a lot of where this stuff is for, is to get data on the mobile devices. It's built into Azure. There's something called Power Pivot and Meet. If you're not familiar with Media Room, Media Room is the software Microsoft sells to put advertisements on your websites. Same thing that Google does. Now, here is the important page, the OData resources. There's a whole page here for data developers. And the data developers, that's in the MSDN section. You can read about all these technologies that I cover today. Okay? There's a section there on WCF data services. So if you were to go down through here and click on WCF data services, I'm half blind, but it's got to be there somewhere. I'll just click on it here. So there are pages that have all of these tutorials, samples and things, articles for you to read. Okay? This one is my favorite. Did you know that there's an OData website? Okay, all of you need to do this, but you can wait until Tuesday. Okay, so it's odata.org. Okay, now in here, you can go to the developer section, and it tells you with a little story how all this stuff works. And then if you go to the SDK, here's all the software bits you need to test it. It also talks about consumers, which are sample applications that read OData. And it tells you about providers or producers, people that make OData. Notice SharePoint 2010, Microsoft Azure, reporting services. Netflix. Ooh, this could be fun. And some other services. Now, there's another thing that Microsoft has announced called Dallas. Dallas is an initiative, also a city, and a terrible football team. Oh, yeah. One can only hope. Anyways, Dallas is going to be a place where you can go publish your data, and it's also a place where developers can connect to and find interesting data. Like, would you want to know all of the available movie times? How many theaters are still running Avatar in 3D? That kind of thing. We should be able to ask those questions. So think of it as like Bing or Google search for data. That's what Dallas is. Now, in closing, they got this cool thing called, here we go. Okay, so here's Northwind. Now, the reason this is cool to you, it's written in Silverlight 4. All the data access here is using OData connected to these public services that have already announced availability. So Microsoft hosted the Northwind database. If you want to go to the orders, you can do that. Come on, could you be any slower? I could have picked a different one. I probably shouldn't have picked orders. There's so many. Let's go to customers. Okay. Now, you see these little links here? So if I want to see the customer and what orders that particular customer has, I click there and I can see the list of orders. If I want to see the employee that sold the order, I click on employee. So it lets me drill down through the hierarchy in the entity framework model. That's pretty useful. Now, what if we go to the Open Science group? Oh, cancel, stop it. All right, I know that. I just told you that. Wouldn't you like to know how many dialysis clinics there are in the United States? Would you like to know how many fire stations there are they're all there. And this is all government data. In fact, there's probably one of these tables that lists the votes of every darn congressman about the health care bill. And it goes on and on and on and on. So, let's finish up with Netflix. They have the entire Netflix catalog on here. So if we go to titles, there you go. And it actually can show you the pictures, which is cute. Look how wide the data is, all the way across. Okay, now, let's do a query. What's the syntax? Wrong. Splash is already there. Titles. Question mark, correct. Show me the money. Filter equals name equals, and our favorite, poor Sandra. She's such a nice girl. What is she doing with this guy? And when I click go, what happens? Seems to have air handling built in. Why? Danny will give you a prize if you tell me what's wrong with this query. Nope. Come on, I want confident responses. Nah. This is so simple. Because, is it all right? Okay. No Zoom this time. Case sensitive, it's all XML crap. Name, if you look at the, and maybe you didn't see that. I should have showed you that. All right. Okay. Well, that didn't work out very well, didn't it? Let's do this. Probably should have done it on people. Let me do it on people. Same idea. This would have been more dramatic had you seen. I thought I had this one up on the screen. I'm sorry. But he won fair and square, didn't he? Okay, so that quickly, it could go through tens of thousands of movie stars and come up with one. And then in here, we can say, show the titles that she was in. And that's not all her movies. That's only the movies that they have in Netflix right now, which, of course, are not the good ones. That's the way Netflix works. So, all right. Now, when we go to Raw, we can see the data in Atom format. This is what comes back, similar to what I showed you. Or for those JavaScript sissies, it comes back in JSON. Same idea. So if you want to learn what the difference is between Atom and JSON, you can see here. And you can query more data than you could ever imagine. Now, right now, there's only a couple things available in this format. In a year from now, there's going to be thousands of databases like this. That's why you want to learn this stuff. So, you're going to learn the SQL tools in Visual Studio 2010. You're going to realize that ADO.NET is old school. You got to learn Link. Once you learn Link, skip Link to SQL and go to Entity Framework. Use the power of Entity Framework, build on that, and use it to link to things in your ASP.NET pages using controls. Use it to drive data services and its cousin, RIA services. And finally, understand the OData format and the query syntax you use, because everybody's going this direction. And the data you have here will work on any device. It doesn't matter the manufacturer, the model. It'll work in cars. It'll work in cell phones, all that stuff. That is how they get the darn data into the apps, by the way. So, I rest my case. my closing tag.